These are areas in which we all end up having to communicate if we are teachers. And they are not always easy things to say or easy things to have to say to each other. So first off, I called this speaking the truth in love when you need to address something with another adult, somebody that's your equal. And this is perhaps speaking generally. It could be true for when we're speaking to another faculty member, a co-teacher, the principal, a patron. What I'm saying here could be anybody. What I'm going to say specifically about patrons and faculty, I'm going to be more specific there. So this is a bit more general. When you need to bring something up, when it is needed, or you at least believe it is needed, take the courage and figure out how to do it. We all know that leaving the elephant in the room is not useful at all, especially when you're trying to work together. You're on a faculty, or you are working with a family in the community. If there is something going on that you really believe needs to be addressed and you are afraid of it, I certainly understand the sensation of being very afraid of that, but issues don't go away. And I'm preaching to myself on that one. I don't like conflict any better than anybody else does. I'd rather, use some humor, say a joke, and duck out of it. But if it needs to be addressed, then take courage and figure out how you're going to do it, because nobody benefits from not talking about it. Also, while you don't want to be a whining, nagging person, for sure, it's a lot better to address issues that are small and smaller as they come along rather than to collect the bucketful and then say, we have to talk, and then dump. That happens pretty easily. It happens pretty easily because it takes courage to bring up issues and to have a conversation about issues. It takes a lot of courage to do that. And so we don't do it quickly. And then soon we have two issues and still not quite enough. And then three issues. And at some point we get so frustrated, we just plow into it. And then we collect them all because we want to make sure this other person understands that you're serious and that we have a big problem. And then you dump all of them at once. And when that happens, you could understand why that other person is a little frustrated with you. Because any one of those individual things would have been so easy to navigate and deal with and correct. And now you were waiting? You're speaking about things that happened at the beginning of the year. It's March. You waited all those months with this thing, and then you put it together with other things and you brought it. So that is a real challenge, to not let things accumulate and to have the courage to bring things up sooner instead of later. And even if you didn't have the courage to bring up things sooner, try not to bundle them all together and do it at once. Keep things isolated from each other. You know, maybe, what it feels like when the principal or the school board collects, and there's this complaint from a patron, there's that concern, and maybe your principal's exactly like you, he doesn't like to go in there and address these things because that takes courage. Do you ever think about how hard it is for your principal to come and say things to you? It doesn't feel that way when they, right? We don't think about them usually. We're just hearing what's coming at us. But it is true. Most of them, they don't actually like doing this. They sometimes have to get up their courage to come to you and talk about something that maybe could use some improvement. So we might know what it's like. If we've taught for a while, we do know what it's like when a board collects things until they have enough put together for one big meeting and you feel like you got clobbered. And you also have this sensation of, well, why didn't you tell me about that when it came up? It would have been easy enough to deal with. I would have actually been willing to do something about that, believe it or not. And now we collect all these things and it comes, and you're sitting there wondering if they want you to be their teacher or not. But what actually happened is somebody didn't have the courage to give you things one at a time, even when they didn't seem to be serious. They collected them all, and now it's worth having a meeting, and now you're wondering whether they want you to teach for them or not. That's on their side, but we as teachers can be the same way, if we're honest. Choose a safe and a private place to have a conversation. It doesn't have to be a context that is daunting. It doesn't have to be the office. And I know sometimes, we'll get to this when we talk about disciplinary communication, but sometimes we need to use the office. It's the only private place in school. But I have been as happy sometimes not to take that 10th grader into the office to have that conversation, because the office itself, it's like having a conversation with a second grader in the furnace room, if you know what I mean. They're going to be terrified, even if this wasn't a spanking of any kind. So I guess if you want to terrify your second graders, take them to the furnace room to talk to them about things. No, don't, unless you really do intend to carry out some discipline there. Anyway, so maybe think about the context, and if it's not necessary to have them in the office, have that conversation with them somewhere else. And if it's with an equal, maybe let them choose a place. If you need to talk about something, let them choose a place and a time that suits them well. Because you're not coming to hit them with something. You're coming because we need to talk about something, and we keep it comfortable. I think it's important, whether this is speaking with an equal or whether it's speaking with our students, it's important to frame our problem that we have as a question rather than a command. And the question shouldn't be why. We crossed this before. Why did you do that? We're really quick to do that with students. Why did you do that? It's a terrible question, because they can say, and then you're stuck. But when we're working with equals, it's also important to stay away from the why question. But ask them, if there's something that they are doing, ask them to consider changing, because it's making a problem for me. And if you work in a Christian environment, you are more likely than not talking to somebody who would be more than happy to take that in consideration and do something about it for you. They just didn't know. But asking them if they would consider what you have in mind or consider changing something. There is a massive difference between asking your co-teacher if they would consider taking that bright pink paper out of the copier when they're finished. So when you come along to do something, it doesn't spit out your project in bright pink paper. Something like that. Some of us get irritated a little bit more quickly with things like that. We have to start all over, take this paper out, find out where it belongs in the cabinet, and then start all over with our thing. Whereas they could have just taken the paper out a little bit the same way that they put it in to do their printing. You could simply raise the issue and ask if they could just take that back out when they're finished, because I often have to start over if they leave it in there, because I didn't want hot pink for something. Whereas you could go and indicate or suggest that they are sloppy with their work, or that they're not careful, or that they don't care about other faculty or something like that. And I would suggest if you simply ask them, if they could, you maybe remember to pull that out, it would make it a lot easier for me. Fine. They'll try to remember. I'm positive they'll try to remember. But if you're indicating that they were being careless and weren't thinking about others, now you have to somehow bump over something that feels a little bit like a personal attack. But all you wanted is for that hot pink paper to be out of the copier when you come along. That's all you wanted. That's all you needed. You don't need to insinuate that they weren't thinking. None of us like when people around us tell us that we weren't thinking, even when it's true. We don't really like it much. So think about asking or requesting. Take your time with it. Oftentimes, the bigger the issue or the more complex it is, especially if it was an issue that formed over a long time, it's going to take a while to talk about it, and you need to be patient. I think one of the bigger issues, and I'm going to say this a couple times this morning, I'm afraid, but I think it's important that we clearly and confidently tell them what it was about what they did or are doing that made a problem for us. If we beat around the bush or we're ambiguous about it, does not help at all. And like I was saying, keep it focused on what happened or what they did, not what kind of person they are that would have caused this to happen. Stay away from that. Both adults, perhaps there are extreme times when we may need to bring up the fact that we're not sure if they were completely honest about something. Now, that's tricky territory. If somebody was not honest with you about something, and sometimes this needs to be brought up. Adults are not always honest with each other, and it can really make a problem sometimes. And then you are addressing the fact that this other adult was not honest. They told this person that, and they told that person something opposite, and they told us something that was yet another version of something. And it might be completely appropriate to address that kindly and to put that right on the table in front of them and ask them, how do we go from here? When you're dealing with something like that, that is personal right out of the gate. This is a deep problem. Something broke apart and you're addressing it because there was damage done by that. But generally speaking, if it was just something that's been irritating, something they do or don't do, something they could do that would be very helpful, then stick with what that thing is and keep the... This has nothing to do with what kind of person they are. Don't make it that. Give opportunity for them to share their perspective, because more times than not, we didn't have the whole picture. And we must give them a chance to fill that in, or they're going to feel like you are not being fair. And if they go away feeling like you are not being fair with them, you probably will not get the result you were looking for anytime soon. Also, we can sometimes bring a complaint to somebody, but what we hadn't thought through was exactly what we think they should be doing. We weren't ready for that. We know what it is we didn't like, but we didn't think through just exactly what we're going to suggest that would be better. So have that ready to go. If you're asking somebody to stop doing something, then be ready to tell them what you would appreciate. And again, here you have to say, you have to be clear about this, because clarity is your friend. You only have misunderstandings if you bring a complaint that's vague and then they want to know what they could or should do that would make it better for you, and you're vague there. It doesn't work. Soon they're wondering why you ever brought it up, because it doesn't seem like you know what you want. And it's a fair thing to ask. If somebody brings something up and they're so vague, both in the complaint and in the suggested solution. So be ready to have some ideas for what would make this better for you. And again, when you ask your equal to do something that would improve the situation for you, pretty please. You're asking them to do something. Use courtesy in that. Use the word please. And also ask, check, was it going to make a problem for you to do that? I'm asking you to do something different because it's been making an issue here. But I absolutely need to be checking. Is that going to make a problem for you? Just ask that question. Here's an idea I have, and you ask, is that going to make any problem for you at all? Or in the middle of this, also ask this important question. Is there anything I've been doing that has made anything difficult for you? You were the one that had the nerve, or the courage, I should say, to bring up this conversation. It would be a wonderful time for you to allow them the opportunity to reciprocate. Where have you been leaving the stapler when you were finished with it? Or whatever. Is there anything, you know, be open and actually ask them if there's anything that you have been doing that has been a problem or been difficult. Give them that opportunity and they will feel like this was a fair exchange. We're learning to work together. And I'm using, you know, school office examples here, and you can apply this to all kinds of things. If you are bringing an issue to another adult and you have clearly set out what your problem is, what's creating a problem for you, and what you think could be helpful, say that with a please, and also make sure that they have opportunity to say anything about that, and even opportunity to bring something up that they could bring up, that you could make easier for them. And of course, anytime you're working with whether it's your equal or a student, it helps a lot to communicate what it is that you do appreciate that they're doing well. Things you do appreciate about what they're doing. And, of course, we should be doing that all the time, but even in that conversation, it's good to remind them that there are things that I really, really appreciate about working with you. And you have to be sincere about that. This is not a game where you're trying to sell a car at all. Let them know that you appreciate the fact that they were willing to listen. And in these conversations with other adults, it is useful to be a little bit self-deprecating. If you can know how to do that, it's worth a lot to be a bit self-deprecating. You're not a police officer here at all. We have our issues, right? We have our things, and you can be a little self-deprecating. It just helps keep it natural and comfortable. Tell them that you've had things like this already too, and you can tell them a little story about something you did that irritated. You can tell them about something you did that irritated your spouse for a very long time, or something like that. We work together, we live together, we know what this is like, and we want to present our case and ourselves in an understanding and open and vulnerable way. I think that goes so far with this. Now, disciplinary communication. You are a teacher, a student, did something they shouldn't have, and now what are you going to say? I'm not going to talk about what are you going to do. I'm only going to focus on how are you going to communicate and speak with them about that. You're working with children and adolescents. They live in this world, some of them, live in this world where they feel like they're bumping from one adult who is telling them to stop doing that to another adult who is telling them to stop doing that. And they wonder when they're going to be in trouble next. There's some youngsters that this is their world. Their crises are the times that they're in trouble with the teacher or with their parents or something. And that's unfortunate that they aren't also thinking about the things that they're enjoying and loving at the same time. So depending on the child, they may have gotten into trouble often, and it's here's another round. Do we want to just be another round, another time when they have this guilt, they know they're going to the office, they know they're in trouble, and they're up against, and who knows what this adult's going to do with them? Or can we communicate in such a way that they understand this isn't just another upset adult? This adult actually cares about us, about me. This adult, she is doing this. She is requiring me to do something in response to something I did, but she's not angry. She actually clearly likes me. I can't go away saying, teacher doesn't like me. Now, students are not always accurate on this, but I have wondered already when a student goes off and he says, the teacher doesn't like me, and they're in third grade or second grade or first grade, what does that mean? If a first grader says to his mom, the teacher doesn't like me, I don't know. That gives me pause. Is a first grader just getting it terribly wrong? They could. Or are they picking up on things that you were quite certain you were keeping hidden from them? Or maybe it was simply that in your communicating with them when they needed discipline, you did it in such a way that was maybe too aggressive or too heavy-handed or something, and they went off feeling like, yes, they lied, they know, but the teacher doesn't like me. Okay, you need to read between the lines if you're mama, because a child that got in trouble at school and needs to explain this to his mother can sometimes say things like this just to kind of level the playing field or stay in control of the situation. It was the teacher that picked on me. So as a parent, you need to really read between the lines. But as a teacher, we should be concerned when a student is saying that, and we should ask ourselves whether there's anything that we've done that actually created that or not. And so I think it's important that in any case, when we talk about what happened, they broke the rule or they did something, they were mean to another student, focus on what they did, not on who they are or the fact that they did this before and they seem to just be a mean person or a naughty person or they seem to be somebody that's a liar. if they lied for the second time, I think it's still true that we talk about the lie and the problem that that makes. If you start going into you're a liar, you're in some trouble, I think. So talk about the problem that makes. Keep your focus on the behavior, on the thing that happened, and off of the child himself. For small infractions on policy or guidelines, find a way to say a word or two or just raise your eyebrow. That's communication. Find a way to bring that back on track. Matter of fact, you didn't break the whole system down because you forgot to close that door. No, you forgot to close that door. So get the door and go on. Keep it as brief as possible. And I think the older your students are, the more important this is. I've never met an adolescent that loves to get a lecture over a simple mistake they made. They don't like a preaching. They don't like to hear about all the trouble they're going to have in the future with things if they don't remember to do their job and be responsible. They love it. No, it doesn't work. So stay out of that territory. This was what happened. Focus on it. And if it's something that's a habit or something that needs to change, then you might have to sit down and map out a plan for how we're going to remember this. And very important with this communication that you don't drag a lot of past things in here in order to make a little bit bigger, a bigger case so that you make a bigger impression on them. I don't know that we have to make a bigger impression on them, really. And if you are dragging in things that have been dealt with early in the year so that you have enough to make a case finally and to get their attention, they're only going to be hearing that you drug in stuff that was dealt with before, and they're not going to trust you with that. I think we lose trust when we do that. I think that's what we lose more than anything else. When we drag things in order to make a bigger case, we're on the roll now. We've got this student and we're tired of this. And we start dragging things in carelessly to make a bigger impression. You'll lose their trust. Again, don't spend a lot of time on the why. I don't know if I ever remember. I only ever taught from about 13 years old and up. I don't know if I've ever had a situation where they could answer the why question well. Why did you do that? And they aren't always just stonewalling you. They aren't always just being ornery. They honestly don't know why, quite often. Adolescents do not know why they do everything they do. And when they are asked to stop and think back over that, they sometimes cannot find the right words to explain it. And so they're silent. And what you really can get yourself into trouble with is do the why question and then start leaning on them because they're not giving you a good answer. Right? Start pressuring them and suggesting that they're not being honest or they're being stubborn. Right? They're being stubborn. That's why they're not answering your why question. Maybe not. Maybe, but maybe not. Doing that escalates the situation and you're probably not going to get them talking either. So focus on what happened, and if it's a child that always has a long reason for doing that, because they do exist and I've met them, they have their reason for not following your guidelines, then you want to know that and not give them opportunity to share their reason at all. Go straight in with, this is what we observed, this is what I think happened. You might ask, just to be courteous, whether that lines up with what they did. But if you really did see it, then don't spend too much time. I'm slow at pressuring you. I'm slow to suggest that we should pressure younger students into having all kinds of opportunities to lie their way out of something. I don't think that's fair. They're under pressure. All they're thinking is they're going to get punished. Maybe it's spanking. And depending how you frame that conversation, there are a lot of children that are going to start heading into lying territory because they are really afraid of the situation. And it actually comes to their mind that it might be worth trying to get out of it. And so, if you can frame your questions and your conversation in such a way that they don't have a large opportunity to say, no, I didn't do that. If you really don't know whether they did something or not, and they're in second grade, if you really do not know this happened, are you doing the best thing by hauling them in and trying to discipline them? Or should you do a little more checking into this thing? Or should you wait for it to happen again or something. I'm not sure. If you really do not have information and you go into a conversation with a student, be ready for that to become a situation where you are less sure of what happened after you talked to the child than you were before, and now you're really at sea with what's going on here. Because what they told you in that situation didn't line up, and now things are really confused. So, focus on what happened. Instead of saying, did you do so and so, maybe you could ask, do you know the problem that this creates? Go straight into the problem that this behavior creates, assuming that they did it because you saw it. If you did not see a student do something and you still think you should warn them about this, then you could tell them that, I believe this happened and I've gotten this report. Let me tell you what's wrong with this. And you could completely dodge whether you are saying that you think they did it or didn't do it. You just want them to know that you hear these things, you're around, and it's a problem. And in the case you did this, this is why we're not allowed to do this and why we don't want this at all. And if you can completely jump over the thing of whether they really did this or didn't do this and just say, I think this is what I saw, I've gotten this report, and go straight into why this is a problem and straight into asking them to watch out and not do that. And I wouldn't even say not do that again, because remember, you're not absolutely sure they did it. And you don't want to have this thing set up where they're saying, I didn't do it, and you're saying they did do it, and that's the only thing they're hearing. You want them to hear that you're around and you pick up on these things, and in the case that they did actually do this, this is why we don't do this, and I don't want you to do that. You know, and you can let it at that. And you can have gained a lot of ground there without coming into a conflict or a standoff on whether something happened or didn't happen. Be very clear about what's wrong with what they did. Be very clear about what they need to do. And move into that pretty quickly. If they need to apologize to somebody, make sure that happens. If, in many cases, with a lot of students, especially younger students, I want to see the apology before it goes over. I just want to see it. We want to make sure that this person that you hurt, really, that this gets cleared up. So I want to see your apology. And if I see an apology that's not in very good grammar, I don't fix it up. I'm looking to see if the apology is actually an apology or not. For older students, I have frequently said, I'm going to check back in a day to see if you made that apology. And I don't know what it was. You're going to have to make it up yourself. I'm not going to make it up for you. You're old enough now. And you're going to see that it happens. And I will check with both parties to see that it happened. And if you tell an older student that you will be checking back to see that this happened, they normally see that it happens. And you don't really need to exactly know what that apology sounded like. You just are training them that this must be done when you offend somebody. And you're staying on their case about it a bit. Be very clear about what needs to be done to resolve the issue. And then when they do that, make sure they understand that the issue is resolved. It's over, you're satisfied. Because not very many students are good with having had this thing and now they don't really know if the teacher is satisfied, if it's done, if it's over for sure. So be very clear when you think it was fulfilled satisfactory that you let them know that that's good. That's good. And follow that up with keep up the good work or something like that. Some little encouragement. Let them know. Tell them you appreciate it. Tell them that you understand it's difficult to clean up this situation and to make the apology and all that, but tell them that it's the best thing you could ever do. Tell them that I have to do that. And I don't like it either, but it's the best thing we can do. Just a comment or two on communicating on the positive side, to encourage good behavior and to encourage good work and to encourage hanging in there and persevering with their learning, whatever their challenges are. Paying attention to the students' needs and to their emotional state, I think, is valuable. And paying attention to how they're doing with their homework, I think it's... I always feel like I failed completely when I find out from a patron that this student had XYZ much homework, and I wasn't aware of that. I feel like I wasn't paying attention. I always tried very hard to know where my students were with their work and know what went home and know what came back. I was very hands-on with the homework. Maybe too much. I don't know. But I always wanted to know how they were doing and where they were in their work. And when you have 25 students, you have a lot of work cut out. I had my students turn all of their work in, even 10th graders, so you understand what I mean by being a little extreme. They turned all of their work in when they had it completed, and I got a chance to see it and to know whether I had it or didn't have it, who was done, who was not done for classes that day. So in the morning, I had to know where everybody was with their homework for the classes that day. I think a lot of that was just I could not handle coming to class and they weren't prepared, because that just messes everything up, as you so well know. And so I wanted to get that all straight in the morning so that we were set for the day. But know how they're making out, know who's falling behind before it's a disaster, and address that and do something to help that out. Keep the focus off the grade. It's hard to encourage people to do the students to do their very best and try to get high grades and not do that so much so that the students who are struggling don't end up always hearing the teacher fuss over these wonderful students and their grades and then make these sort of sideways comments about those who, have lower grades. So whatever you do, just be careful in that territory. You heard me say that before. Perhaps it's a pet of mine. Show patience and kindness and understanding, but still ask them to try. Ask them to learn something new. Ask them to step outside of their comfort zone. And let them know when they've done a good job. Let them know when you're satisfied. The student that struggles in school with the work struggles probably the most with whether they are satisfying their teacher or not with what they are doing. Is the teacher happy with what I'm doing or no? And if a student has the sensation the teacher is not happy or not satisfied with their performance, or is just simply staying out of it and saying absolutely nothing about it, you can understand why they would end up not liking school. So even the students that are struggling with their grades, let them know you're satisfied with the progress you've seen, with the work they've put into it, so that they have a sense that they actually did accomplish what you were hoping they would accomplish. Let them know when you're satisfied with what they have done, and when you're happy with what they had done. Communicating with patrons. You're the teacher in the community. Do you have time to talk about haying and the cattle and the wood shop and the car breaks and the trip they took? And you cannot afford not to have small talk with your patrons so that they learn to know you a little bit and you learn to know them a little bit. It is very important. And some of us have a large order on our hands because we're going to a community where we don't know any of the patrons. It's a new community. Do what you can to learn to know the people by visiting with them about anything. I know some of us find it hard to visit with strangers, and it's harder for us to do it, but it's still very, very important. You don't want to have the first communication that you have with your patrons be something serious about their student. You want to have talked to them a little bit before that, somehow, somewhere. So connect through everyday communications with your patrons. It can set the stage for talking about things that are perhaps a little bit more tricky. Initiate the conversation. Even though you are the 20-year-old teacher and that parent is 39, if there's something going on, you're probably the one that's going to have the courage to initiate the conversation. I have found that parents are at least as scared of the teachers as teachers are scared of the parents sometimes. And so don't wait. There's this issue, there's this thing that should be worked on or addressed, and you're just hoping they come around and ask how their child's doing, right? You're hoping they come around and check up and give you the opportunity. You might not want to wait for that. That might be too long in coming because they're busy. And so even though you feel like you are the young one, you're the inexperienced one, you need to work up the courage to initiate the conversation when there's something that would benefit being addressed. It feels unfair. It feels like they should be the one coming and asking you how Susie is doing in school. But, well, no. They are very busy and you're the teacher, so go ahead. Take the courage and do it. Let the patrons know when things are going well. Patrons don't like to only hear about complaints any more than what you as a teacher only like to hear from your principal or from your parents about the mistakes. They like to hear when things are going well, too. Keep a little bit of record about your conversation with patrons. There's nothing wrong with making a little note saying, I called them today, this is the date, this is what it was about, this is what we talked about. Because if you have a lot of patrons, you can forget things. You can forget that you told that patron that you're going to check back in a week or two. You can forget what you talked about. And that's not helpful. You can really talk past each other if you were not remembering the previous conversation. So it is, I would encourage you to take a few, if you made a contact and you talked about something about their child, take notes of that. Take notes about things they said. You might have learned something about that child you didn't know before and you want to remember that. So take notes of that. There are also the unfortunate situations when your notes will save your skin because something broke down and some parents are not happy and maybe they're not being fair and maybe they're saying this to the school board and this to you, but you have some notes of the conversation. I hope that never happens to you, but sometimes having a record of conversations is necessary in order to sort things out if they get really messy. So that you're not just saying, well, I thought they maybe said no. You can say, well, let me check. I took notes of that conversation. Maybe you're sitting down with the school board and they got a whole earful that was wide-ranging. And when you sit down, you can say, we had this conversation and this is what was said in that conversation. So sometimes a record of what was said is necessary. I hope you're never in a situation that gets that complicated. Ask the parents for advice and do not suggest in any way with your talk that you know what their child needs better than they do. It may be true, but they don't really want to hear that in those words. Let them know that you are there helping them with their child's education, with their child's character development. Be free asking for advice. They appreciate that. And they will often even open up and ask you for advice then as well. They will often say, what could we do at home to help with this? And you can have that conversation without it shutting down. Control talk doesn't work here at all. You cannot control talk patrons into the result you want. They may give it to you just to get out of that situation, but they aren't really going to be supporting you out of the classroom, outside of the classroom. Follow up where needed. Try to find out what they're hearing and seeing. I worked with adolescents, and it's especially true perhaps if you're a man teacher and you have adolescent girls in the classroom. There are a lot of things you are not going to see or hear that mom does. You should be talking with mom and dad and see if there's anything that's come up in there that you should know to close that circle, because I have found very often it's the only way the circle could be closed. It can be true of boys too, but especially perhaps of girls if you're a man teacher in teaching that age group. There can be things going on among the girls that you are not picking up on because they're really good at liking each other when they're around their teacher and tearing each other to pieces when they're not. This isn't a typical thing or anything like that. I'm not suggesting, don't read too much into this. But you can find out sometimes from mom that there is all kinds of stress going on among the girls in the room and there was something, but you couldn't tell what it was really at all because they kept it nice when you were around, perhaps. And this can be true of boys as well, for sure. But boys tend to, they don't hide it quite as well. You'll catch them boxing each other up. They're not as good at it, perhaps. Communicating with faculty and board, last thing. When you are on a faculty, do not let familiarity make you careless in your conversations and in your communication. You are closely together with perhaps a small faculty, and you can end up, you know, joking and teasing each other and doing things and really being comfortable with each other. Be careful. You are adults working together, and that can go badly wrong faster than you think when you're being careless. You cannot respect your co-teachers enough. And if you respect somebody, you're going to behave and communicate in a respectable way as well. So don't let familiarity blow things up for you. It's pretty important. Also, be aware of the difference in genders. Men talk to get things done, and they often don't listen very well, and they don't read between the lines very well, and they tend to respond to a request a little bit better than a demand. And that is not to their credit, but it's true. So keep that in mind. And also, women are often more concerned about relationship and feelings when they talk, and they are more aware of the emotional effect of their words, and they tend to be indirect when they ask for something or when they need something. They suggest that when they're seeking agreement or sharing their ideas or making a request, it can take a little while and they're vague, or at least that's how it feels to the men. And when the men find out what they really meant, there's this thought goes flitting through our mind of, well, you know, they could have said that. Just be aware of that, because if you're on a faculty and you have men and women working close together in very challenging situations sometimes, you must keep that in mind. You think you're problem solving, you're slicing and dicing, solving, it's over, and they haven't even started working through the implications of what you are suggesting, right? You've already solved it. And whatever it was they were going to say about the issue, the opportunity's gone. You've already solved it, and you're out of the room, and you're... No. So be very careful about that and be aware of it, and it can help. What I am saying is that if you're a man teacher or a principal, know that they sometimes need time and listen to them. And if you are a lady teacher, practice being a little bit more direct. Just know that whoever it is you're working with is going to understand that a little bit better, maybe. Learn how to frame it clearly and get it in there. And I guess, maybe I'm saying, but just a bit more aggressive sometimes, especially when things are moving fast. You need to jump in and say your thing as well as you can. Invest in each other, be committed to each other, and trust each other. And do not let little things pile up to where you can't stand each other, and here you are having to work closely together. Use communication to keep that from happening as much as possible. In conclusion, other people are one of the most important assets we have in our life. If we cut ourselves off from them through poor communication, our loss is always a lot greater than we can imagine. Always. Disconnection can destroy us long before we're through. Conversely, meaningful relationships that are built through good communication skills can help us through our deepest sufferings and can also augment our greatest joys. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Thank you, and God bless you in your coming school year.